to episode 370 of the Steel Cage Podcast. My name is Derek Montilla, occasionally known as your dose of toxic masculinity. We have ourselves a two-man crew this week to discuss a very interesting, fun week in wrestling, specifically on Raw. On Raw? What?
Specifically anyway, on Raw?
Joining us is... Specifically on Raw, joining us from the Marty Jannetty Memorial Studio in Phoenix, Arizona, is the founder and proprietor of thesteelcage.com, Mr. Joshua Schlag.
Oh, yeah, in case you're worried, we did make it back from Vegas, the road trip completed, and yeah, we're here. We're back in the WWE swing of things. AEW is months away at this point.
Well, we can talk about that, I think, briefly, because AEW has kind of encompassed the wrestling world news as of late. We had not only the story coming out, or I guess we were there, we were present when they were announcing some new members of the roster, Nyla Rose being the first transgender woman to be involved in wrestling. There was a lot of debate or a lot of discussion that was kind of brought up on social media about, I'd say it starts off with the shitty comments that people make about her in general. That's what it starts off with. And then what it kind of, the debate comes down to AEW and the way that they handle that particular subject. I mean, we've seen some very strong wording and some promotions taking a very strong stance when it comes to that type of behavior, when it comes to just talking about inclusion. Progress is the first one that comes to mind for me, because Progress just has that attitude of, like, we include everybody, fuck off if you don't like it. And I,
it's really in their name.
That's the stance everybody kind of needs to take, right? Sure. You know what I mean? Like, there was kind of some pressure, I would say, on social media, or at least some requests from people who wanted, AEW to address it. And they did. They basically, Force came with a strong message about inclusion and about, kind of making sure it's a safe place for everybody. In some cases, it still wasn't enough for some people, but it seems like a, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a difficult position to take when it comes to that kind of thing. I think it really just comes down to trying to word it correctly so that you're really not trying to pick a fight with any particular group right away. I'll say this, though. If there's one group you're going to pick a fight with, fuck it. It's misogynistic assholes that have a problem with a transgender woman being in pro wrestling. I don't know.
Let them stew in their hatred, man. Fuck those guys.
There's never been a single episode of Dates where Tim and I have worried that we're going to offend the Nazi fucking population with the way we sign off each episode.
Exactly.
No, because we have a fucking clear-cut stance on where we are about Nazis. Fuck them. Literally. But metaphorically. I don't mean that literally. I just mean fuck them. But it's the stance that you take on things like that. There shouldn't be. And that's the one thing that's weird that's come up in the last 5 years to me, is how there's this weird gray zone where we want to accept, like, fucking white supremacists and as their own group that deserves their own word, their own say, and people that there's a lot of people out there that I'm like, I don't give a fuck about what those people say. Really, it comes down to those kind of people that have a problem with anybody. I mean, I love what AEW's done. We talked about it on the podcast we did coming back. But there's just a lot of things there that AEW is doing right. And I don't really think they should be scrutinized really for not taking the hardest stance on this. But I thought that they sent a pretty clear-cut message when it came to where they are on it. I thought they did when they included people like Nyla and Sunny and all that.
Yeah, that action alone.
Yeah, but it's different, Josh. I mean, it's different for us because we can say that but people don't feel – people that are transgender, people that are gay, they don't feel comfortable coming to the shows knowing that the people that are making these comments underneath these posts are the same people that are coming to the shows also. You know, it's a matter of wanting to feel like you're going to be safe at a wrestling show. There's a lot of different groups that have to deal with that. I mean, women have to deal with that, particularly almost on every fucking wrestling show.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shitty kind of culture when it comes to that kind of stuff, and I hope we can change it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that shit happens. And I do have to agree that, like, the statements made by AEW, both at the press conference the other week and on Twitter lately, I saw Brandy put some tweets out. Like, I think those things are helpful to create a better type of environment, hopefully to discourage asshats from even showing up in the first place. But you're not going to be able to do that. It's not like when we enter the building, they're like asking us, are you a misogynistic prick or not? You know, like those people are going to be there. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah, like, I went to
a woke card, please. Are you woke enough?
I remember going to a Ring of Honor show in Vegas and like hearing comments from people around me. I'm like, man, these are not my people. But you know, yeah, it's one of those things. It's gonna happen, and as long as the wrestling companies themselves are taking the proper stance, like they'll weed themselves out over time. I feel like hope.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think we have to deal with it in every fandom and every culture. Yeah. I think it's a big reason why. You know, we in general have problems with our fandom and the way people act, even when it comes to, like, you know, people of color or people of, you know, people of different sexual orientation being in certain roles in films or whatever. You know, we see that in television, movies, comic books, video games, everything. It sucks, you know, but hopefully it's a shrinking minority that we won't have to deal with as much. It just doesn't feel like that anymore, you know? And so I understand people's concern. I definitely do, because it's weird to read a post that's basically saying, hey, look, we have this awesome person that's making history wrestling for our company. And for the first place for people to go is start debating about this, you know, whether a transgender woman is a woman or a man, and start making real nasty comments that really they think they're being funny and they're just kind of being dicks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it fucking happens, you know, everywhere. Okay. Like this came up. So like one of my big things is trail running and ultra running, and like one of the biggest races out there, like, put out a policy on transgender competitors and that sort of thing. And they laid it out as fairly as they possibly could, and they consulted all sorts of groups and all that sort of stuff. And even then, like, when they go out of their way to, like, make this, honestly, it looks like a super fair policy, and they're getting ahead of the curve and addressing things, like, there's still people coming out and either complaining that they're not doing enough, or there's those a-holes are still, you know, they still feel empowered enough to make a shitty comment. So I don't know, it's one of those things where we're in a, I feel like our society is just in an evolutionary stage. Like, I remember being a kid and like making gay jokes and that sort of thing was still kind of okay, or at least it was generally okay in a lot of society. I'm glad that we've progressed to the point that we have, but yeah, we still have work to do. And I'm glad to see companies like this, you know, do what they're doing.
You and I grew up in an interesting time, because we are definitely young enough to still have time to change, and we have changed, but we also grew up in a time when things were so much different than they are now. I mean, shit, man, go back and watch season one of The Office and watch how offended you'll be by half of the fucking episodes on there when you really think about the things that were allowed to be said on national television just a short time ago versus how, like, incredibly inappropriate that would be at this stage of the game. Yeah. And back then it was just merely kind of poking fun at Michael Scott being an idiot, but it was still okay to say the things that he said on TV. And it's wild. It's wild how the world has changed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, not to transition too smoothly over, but AEW is trying to change the world, you know what I mean? And like, that's partially what they're doing. They're trying to change the wrestling world. They're trying to change the way things are done, but they're also trying to change things like this. And I mean, honestly, for being a fledgling promotion that hasn't even had their first real show yet, that takes a lot of balls. You know what I mean? Like, that takes a lot of fucking courage to put, you know, people on your show that you know are going to be controversial, yet deserve that spot. You know what I mean? It's really a no-brainer when you think about how talented some of these people are that they picked up. But it does. It takes an amount of courage to kind of say, fuck it, we're going to have the first transgender woman on our roster. And we're going to have, you know, wrestlers of different sexual orientations. And it's not really going to be the thing we make them completely about. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that WWE also has a problem with certain people. But, you know, they're definitely on their way. They're changing the wrestling world. And they definitely fucking have arrived, man. They sold out their entire show in 4 minutes, dude, essentially, today. That's pretty wild considering the size of MGM Arena. I looked up the seating capacity today. It's roughly over 17,000 seats. There are a lot of tickets available on the secondary market, but still not that big of a percentage. Probably about 10% of the tickets are available on StubHub right now. So that's I don't know if that's good or bad compared to normal events, but I know when we like look for WrestleMania and shit, all the tickets, when we find a Ticketmaster, are all like verified resellers and other people selling their tickets already, and it's not from the box office. So I don't know. It seems like they did the damn thing. I mean, they haven't done the show yet, but it seems like they already did the damn thing. Uh-huh. And it's really impressive what they're able to do in a short amount of time as far as putting this company together and having people be excited about it.
Yeah, totally. And beyond that, like, it seems like they're already having an impact. Like, we've already talked about pro wrestlers in the WWE potentially asking for their release and things like that because of AEW directly. One of those rumors, something big happened this week on Raw. We saw the Revival get yet another tag team championship opportunity. And, you know, just days after that AEW press conference where they put such a focus on tag team wrestling and how they're you know, they want to make tag team wrestling a thing that's respected, we had the Revival, Bobby Roode and Chad Gable, like, put on a legit tag team clinic. That was such a fun freaking match. And then, of course, the finish and the ending with, you know, the Revival standing tall. We had Triple H taking pictures with the guys and posting "Forever the Revival" hashtag FTR, like
hashtag, you know, FTR coming, yeah, out of Triple H's mouth on Twitter. Oh
yeah, dude. Like,
we're living blessed times.
It's legit, man. And like, they're WWE's feeling the heat. They're like, shit, man. If we don't get our act together on certain things like this, we're gonna lose talented guys that we'd prefer to keep. And you know, doing that and doing things like what they did on Tuesday with the gauntlet match, it's interesting. It's the exact type of stuff that, you know, I think we would want. They said that they would make the fan base the authority of sorts going forward. And, you know, things like this give me hope. It was cool to see.
It was very cool to see. Not only that, I thought that they did it perfectly. They have kind of beat us over the head with tag team championship matches over the last couple of months. Yeah. And it got to the point where it didn't feel like we were ever going to see the tag team championships change hands on Raw, especially involving the Revival. I think that it's the perfect team to put it on to reset the division. You know, once you have it on them, you can do all sorts of things with the division. Frankly, after what I saw out of Gable, I want to see him as a single wrestler. I'm ready to see Chad Gable as a singles wrestler. I'd like to see him feud with Bobby Roode. Yes. I'd like to see Bobby Roode go back to being a heel. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things that can be reset. WWE recently had no problem pressing the reset button on a lot of characters. You notice, like, after Royal Rumble, they just all of a sudden were like, well, fuck it. You're back to being a heel. You're a face now. You're this. You're that. Like, yep. they have no problem. It was the best picture I saw was someone tweeted out the Krusty the clown, switching him from evil to good, and then put a picture of Dean Ambrose up next to it. You know what I mean? It was like, they can just do whatever they want, because who cares? We'll just switch them and people will accept it, right? So it feels like they're getting everything back on track, but the biggest thing was definitely with the tag team. And I found it interesting, too, because there's a lot of talk about Revival going over to AEW. You had Dash Wilder changing his name to Dashiell Wildeer, as most people do when they want to leave WWE, because they go with their shoot names. So that was, for some reason, that was his shoot name. But it was great to see them kind of play into all of this. I mean, they mm-hmm. really leaned into all of this talk. It worked really well, and we got swerved the same way they're trying to swerve everybody on the Becky Lynch situation.
Dude,
so help me totally. God, Josh, the main event at WrestleMania will be Ronda versus Becky. Charlotte won't even be in it. It's just going to be the two of them. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah,
all of this is all fucking swerve, and it's all misdirection, just so that we can eventually get that match.
My wife,
and I'm here for it.
My wife walked in the midst of Vince McMahon's tirade at the end of Raw, and she's like, "Oh, come on, that's not happening."
Yeah,
like she even knows.
Yes.
It to me, okay. So I love it because it's so like it's meta in a way, because like we've talked about, you know, it's gosh, so when Triple H takes the creative control, things are gonna go in a right direction. We're gonna get some cool shit happening, all that. But Vince McMahon, he's just gonna be there and he's just gonna come in and veto shit because that's what he fucking does. Old man Vince, he gets what he wants. And in this case, oh, it's Charlotte. Like, literally, they played it out exactly that way. You know, Becky, you know, she apologized. She did the whole thing. Like, they had some teases of Triple H and Stephanie doing the authority bit. But then once it came down to it, that's not what they were doing. And Becky apologized, and we thought things were good. And then Vince McMahon comes out and says, I'm the old evil fucker, and I'm just going to screw things up because this is what I want, so screw all y'all. I got a kick out of it.
I applaud them on that.
Yes.
I got such a kick out of it. I applaud them on it because, yeah, even with Becky's half-hearted apology, I sat there like holding my breath going, oh, but that wasn't good enough. That Steph and Triple H aren't going to find it to be good enough. And then they went as far as to let her start cutting a promo on Ronda, and they let Ronda come out, and Triple H and Steph are just innocently standing off to the side watching it all. And I'm like, yeah, this is good. And yeah, nope, it wasn't. And I felt like it wasn't going to be good the whole time. And that's why it felt like it was such a perfect payoff, because they did it like so slimy and they did her so dirty right at the end after you thought you had your happy ending and you were finally past all of this shit. It was so great. And you're right. It was
suspended
so
just long enough. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I feel about Charlotte. Like Charlotte's involvement in general, I love it because we have so much time between now and WrestleMania. We really do. And it's funny because it was like everybody's worst fear was Charlotte being added to that match. And sure enough, WWE was like, this is too easy. You guys are making this easy on us. It's like, we just got to go on Twitter for 4 hours and we'll fucking be able to write all of this shit into this. You know what I mean? And it just... The one thing I'm still very impressed by is overall that this story continues to be the main story for WrestleMania. And like, God damn it, if this isn't the real women's revolution, this is the real women's revolution. You can say whatever you want about everything that happens. It's all been great. The all women's pay-per-view, everything they did. We can fuck off and put Saudi Arabia behind us, even though we know they're going back there. But this right here, this storyline is it, man. I mean, this is legitimately it, where it was a natural rise for Becky Lynch. It felt like the fans were behind it, and then WWE also got behind it. It worked out well, but then it somehow became the biggest story in the company, and it honestly is. I described the fact that, like, when we were there live, she was the only one I was hoping I would see. Mm-hmm. And now, like, when I watch an episode of a show, I get to the Becky stuff. That's how I feel, get to the Becky stuff. It's kind of like Daniel Bryan. I'm enjoying Daniel Bryan and what he's doing on SmackDown so much. I feel the same way about him. when I watch SmackDown, I'm almost like, yeah, this is great. Get to Daniel Bryan, you know?
Yeah.
But when that's after Becky Lynch, that's after I've been satisfied with whatever's going to happen with Becky Lynch. I think this is great though, because they have kind of beat up the Becky Lynch story a bit, and it needs exactly this. It needs some time off. It needs her to not be in matches. It just needs something different. And I mean, this suspension is going to prevent
that. Yeah. And exactly, like, this Sunday is Elimination Chamber. Not, you know, it's not WrestleMania this Sunday. WrestleMania is still a month and a half away. So they have a lot of story that they need to tell in the interim. And this is exactly the type of thing.
She's going to fuck up Charlotte in the front row at Elimination Chamber. Because that was that foreshadowing. Charlotte said she had a ticket and she's going to be sitting front row at Elimination Chamber. Becky is going to show up and whip that ass.
Hell yeah.
There's going to be a fight right there in the crowd. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and it's going to force the McMahons to address the situation between Becky and Charlotte and all that stuff. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun ride. Meanwhile, like, Asuka has to be over on the side. Like, what am I, chopped liver? You know, the SmackDown Women's Championship really is being completely ignored. But I think that's part of it. Like, I think they'll come back to that within a couple of weeks, and they'll address that situation because, yeah, ultimately Charlotte's going to need something there, and Asuka's going to need something. And holy crap, that just kind of makes too much sense to pair them again. So I would not be surprised to see that go down that way.
There's a lot left there between those two.
Yeah. But yeah, like, Raw as a whole, I honestly didn't write down notes for the whole show. For me, it was like the tag team stuff and the Becky stuff. But the Becky stuff I really enjoyed what they did, like, throughout the entire show. They opened with a, you have to apologize, we'll give you to the end of the night. And then, you know, consulting with various wrestlers in the backstage area. Not like she was seeking them out, but they would approach her or they would just happen upon each other type of thing. That was cool. A lot of good interactions. I really dug it.
She's great. I mean, that really, we've talked about it a whole bunch, but the scripting of wrestlers is too much. Yeah. Because when you saw the way she was acting, you could tell the way she was acting was not scripted. No one told her to compliment Finn Balor on his abs. That was some shit she thought of in the moment. And that was the best line of the entire, you know, interaction between the two of them, you know. But I love that being the focal point so much. There's a lot that happened on Raw that's forgettable. The six-man tag situation took up a whole bunch of time and
that was terrible.
It was
just
like, get that fucking over with. Yeah, I mean, I'm very disappointed in how they're utilizing Braun and a few of the other guys, but, you know, I get it. You can only focus on so many things at once, and unfortunately, Braun has been pushed into the off pile. He's completely off the radar. He's out of the top 10.
He's still feuding with Baron Corbin. They have a no DQ match at Elimination Chamber. I didn't even realize that they had a match against each other at Elimination Chamber until I went to Wikipedia preparing for this podcast. I was like, what? That's a thing? I guess I fast-forwarded right through that announcement. Hi.
See, when people talk about how stacked WWE's roster is, I have to remind them that they still have a guy that wrestles every week on Monday Night Raw in a fucking dress shirt because his tummy looks weird. All right? Like, that's the shit that we don't need anymore. Let's fucking get the Baron Corbins of the world out of here. We've given him a chance. We've given him multiple chances. I just don't see someone like that lasting the level of talent WWE has, right? Yeah. Again, though, this goes back to the AEW thing, and it's going to be interesting once the contract season comes up and goes, how many other main stars leave, and how quickly WWE gets to a point where they're going to need someone like Baron Corbin to stick around simply to be a body.
There's so many people in the WWE system now, though. Like,
no, I know, and we've talked about that. We've talked about that and not only that, but there are so many more that they're adding. Look at their Performance Center ads this week.
This week alone,
ACH, Trevor Lee. Like, it's ridiculous.
Samuel Shaw, Rachel Ellering, now officially.
See, Samuel Shaw is somebody that I forgot about, but I really enjoyed his work, and I think that's really cool.
He had an interesting little run in Impact, and it's kind of cool to see him land where he did at the Performance Center. You know, like, nothing official has come up about Kushida, but, you know, we're all kind of waiting on that to happen. My guess would be probably showing up at the TakeOver crowd for Mania.
Be a good one.
That's a good one to keep in their back pocket for that type of situation. But I mean, yeah, like, it keeps coming. Like, they keep feeding the system, and eventually, you know, some of those guys are going to find more success or a better fit for them over in AEW, and that's okay. Like, that's okay. And then some of the guys who have had great success in WWE may end up eventually traveling over to AEW, and that's okay too, because that, I don't know, I think it works for everyone. Like, WWE, yeah, they're going to have to get a little more creative. That's you know, a challenge, but it's a challenge that they should welcome. And then as far as the fans go, like, we all benefit from that sort of thing. Competition, it's good. It's a good thing.
Yep, I agree. Now we have the Women's Tag Team Championships that are being introduced at Elimination Chamber. So both shows did hold a qualifying match of sorts, with the loser being the first one in the Elimination Chamber.
Right. Which is a cool idea. I like that.
I can't see this being any, like we addressed last week, I can't see this being anything more than a vehicle for Sasha and Bayley.
The boss but and hug connection.
I mean, it just feels like what that entire thing has been leading up to. It feels like the whole reason why they have women's tag belts are them, you know? Mm-hmm. But it would be quite the swerve to give it to somebody else and then maybe cause this to be the rift that finally tears Sasha and Bayley apart. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, as far as
either way, I'm good.
As far as it being a swerve, too, like, I put all the rest of the teams pretty much on the same level, with the exception of Naomi and Carmella, who should not even be in the match. That's still,
you have a problem with that.
It still irks me. They're not a fucking team. They just threw them together, man. Yeah. And then, like, it really just bugs me, because they have a team down in NXT. They're not doing anything this Sunday. Like, why not bring up Io and Kairi? Like, they've been established as a team for, like, months now, and it felt like it was building to this. And
they have a name with it.
The Sky Pirates, yeah.
No. I have to compliment Carmella, though, really fast, and I think that's the reason why I take exception to this, okay. Because I think Carmella is a female Chris Jericho. I think Carmella is a woman of a thousand different pers- I don't mean that based necessarily on her wrestling skills, even though I do think she's a fully capable wrestler and has some great moves in the ring, but she's definitely not one of the best women on the roster at wrestling. I just think, it being a character, she adapts so well at whatever role she's given. I mean, if you look at the things that she's been given over the last, 6 months, she was with No Chin there for a while, and then she was with R-Truth, and now she's with Naomi. And, like, all those times, she's always done a good job of meshing well with the person that she's with. She did a great job at being a heel. She's fantastic at being a heel. She was hilarious with R-Truth. And I mean, now she just kind of became like a totally reasonable part of Naomi's gimmick in a way. And yeah, they just needed another tag team to throw in there, and that's why they threw them together. But I think that, like, you know, to see her come out with Naomi on this week's episode of SmackDown, it was cool, because it was, I don't know, they look like a tag team. I get where you're coming from, though. I definitely do. Especially when, you know, we all want to see Kairi and Io so much, you know what I mean? Like, we want to see them, even if they don't win the tag team championships. It's just a treat just to have them be in that match. You already have so many dull tag teams in there that we don't really care about that much, you know? Like, I'm sorry, but I don't care about any of those tag teams, with the exception of the Iconics and Sasha and Bayley. Those are the only ones I care about.
Oh,
so give it to the Iconics.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't mind what they've done with Mandy and Sonya, Fire and Desire. The Riot Squad has been fun to see, you know, as they've built up over time. Like, they seem to be a legitimate threat. Nia Jax and Tamina, they are what they are. It's, for the most part, it's going to be pretty solid. And I'm not going to, like, you know, I'm not gonna like cross my arms and have a pouty face throughout this match just because it's Naomi and Carmella in there.
Yeah, but if you keep Nia and Tamina together and actually start calling them the Samoan Slaughterhouse and put out a shirt, I'm fucking down with it. I'm down with it.
Anyway. I missed that memo. So yeah,
that's what they said on Raw.
So the other Elimination Chamber match, they had a gauntlet match this week on SmackDown to determine the number six entrant into that match. So we don't really know who's starting, but that's okay. We usually don't when it comes to Elimination Chamber, but they did the opposite way where they, yeah. So, yeah, the Mustafa Ali thing, did that news come out before SmackDown, or was that like kind of during the show where all that came together? Because I didn't hear anything.
I'm pretty sure that came out before, man.
Okay. Part of that might be me not watching Raw and SmackDown live and kind of just avoiding wrestling Twitter for Monday and Tuesday as I tend to do.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, kind of a bummer.
He put out a video basically saying he couldn't be a part of it,
which they showed on SmackDown. I saw that.
Right. Yeah.
Really a bummer, but at the same time, it opens the door for a new opportunity. And they did something really special this week on SmackDown with that gauntlet match with Kofi Kingston. The New Day came out. We weren't sure who was going to be in. And, you know, the dad of the New Day, essentially, the guy that we've talked about many times and the guy that the New Day has talked about many times is deserving of a shot.
Josh. He's the grandfather of the New Day.
Grandfather.
He's Grandpa Kofi.
Grandpa, yeah. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. But regardless, man, that
holy shit, man.
On the same level, so like last it's weird because like last year we had that gauntlet match here in Phoenix.
First thing I thought of when I watched this, by the way.
Yeah. Like we had Seth Rollins doing what he did, and I wasn't expecting Kofi to end up doing what he did, but God, it was such an opportunity, and they made him a top contender now. Like Kofi's in that match this Sunday, and in my opinion, like he's more deserving than Jeff Hardy. I'd put him right up there with AJ Styles, more deserving than Randy Orton, who ended up getting the number six spot. But like to me, I'm like, damn man, Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles is kind of right up in there. Like it makes sense. And just like that in one night, they tell that story and they convince you on it. Like that was cool as shit.
I'm sure people won't remember this as accurately as we do because we were there that particular night. But leading up to that, Seth Rollins had kind of fallen flat.
Yeah.
Like that gauntlet match, like resurrected in a way. It's not like to say Seth Rollins wasn't a top guy or whatever, but it reestablished him as like the top guy. Like we lost our shit for him in that match. And did he lose? Did he lose that match too?
Yes, like he did.
Or did he win that?
He did. Yeah. He was not even in the final two. It was very similar in that regard.
It was very similar in that regard. Whereas this was Kofi once again reminding everybody what he can do. But I think this might be honestly one of his best performances of his entire career.
Yeah.
But again, it's not ability. It's what they allowed him to do. It's who they allowed him to beat that really impressed us.
Yes.
You know, if he would have come in and beaten like a Jeff Hardy and a Mustafa Ali and maybe one other guy, that would have been different. But
he started off with Daniel Bryan, man.
Yeah, he beat Daniel Bryan.
Holy crap.
And then he beat Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Bryan, Jeff Hardy, then Samoa Joe, I believe, was the order. Right.
See, I forgot Jeff Hardy was even in the middle there.
But like Daniel, like he went toe-to-toe with Daniel Bryan alone for over 20 minutes. Like, that was a crazy way to start that match. I mean, like Daniel Bryan, it's not like Daniel Bryan could just lose right off the bat, but like they told a cool story too, where, you know, Daniel Bryan's taking shots to the head and you're kind of like, oh crap, oh no. But that's exactly how he loses. And it makes sense. Like they told a really cool story all throughout this match. And not Joe coming in thinking, yeah, huh, Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I apologize for cutting you off. I was just going to say, though, not to mention the fact that, let's be honest, if anybody else was like me, the New Day is my daughter's godfathers. Let me just start off with saying that. If anything happens to me and my wife, Lily becomes the fourth member of the New Day. It's been agreed upon and decided between me and the members of the New Day. That's the whole other thing. I love these guys so much. With that being said, when they came out to face Daniel Bryan, I thought nothing of it. We just watched them lose a few weeks ago in a tag match here in Phoenix where they didn't even get their entrance on TV, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a part of me that my expectations for whichever member of the New Day was going to be in this were very low going up against Daniel Bryan. I thought that they were just going to be filler. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's what really took me by surprise with Kofi's performance is after a while, I was sitting there going, why are they doing this to me? Why are they letting Kofi hang in this match with Daniel Bryan this long when they're not going to even have him win it or, you know, go on? And he beat Daniel Bryan, and you should have – I acted like Kofi did when the Patriots won. I was running around my fucking house and shit. Like, it was amazing. I couldn't believe it, you know? And what's crazy is that was already with having knowledge based on people spoiling it for me online that Kofi had an amazing night. And I still watched SmackDown, and I still had my expectations way lowered because I just thought that they were talking about, you know, I didn't see any details. So I thought they were just talking about him hanging with Daniel Bryan and the way that that opening of the match went. I was floored by him winning, and then the next, and then the next. And, yeah, man, it got to that point of feeling like Kofi Kingston is the hottest thing in professional wrestling right now in this moment. It was crazy. It was crazy how fast my feelings of excitement, you know, for Kofi kind of came up. But that's what a good match will do for you. We could say that about what they did on Raw with the Revival too. I mean, you talk about how AEW kind of put up that flag that they were going to make tag wrestling important again. And then WWE immediately responds with this. And they did it in such a way that you sit back and go, okay, yeah, you guys can do it. You should do it more often. Stop fucking phoning it in because you can obviously do it. You know, you guys saved that episode of Raw from people in the audience falling asleep after that six-man tag that lasted half of the goddamn show, and you brought it back with the Revival winning the championship, and fucking that's all people in that arena are going to remember is being there that night for that thing. You know, it's impressive the way that when they really focus on building something, on creating something with someone, they can do it. They did it on SmackDown with Mustafa Ali. Look at how much we care about this guy already. You know, that's not easy. Mustafa Ali is not he's a regular guy in a way, the way that they present him. He's not anything that people pop for that immediately because his gimmick isn't anything more than what he claims to be, the heartbeat of the show. You know, the underdog, the guy that's going to fight harder than everybody else. And you don't need more than 10 minutes of watching him to be completely on board with that entire concept. You know, that's the way that SmackDown has positioned him. SmackDown didn't need to do this for Kofi, and he didn't even win. But they did, and it made it awesome. And it immediately made Kofi like a main event contender that should have already had the championship belt like 5 times by this point in his career.
Yeah. I mean, when it came down to it, Kofi was the headline of what happened at SmackDown. Randy Orton, even though he won that match, he was sort of like a sub bullet point. You know, like you'd read the whole article, then at the end it'd say, oh, yeah, by the way, Randy Orton won. Like that's how it went down because that's how it felt. I'm very pleased with those few things. And kind of the rest, yeah, I don't know. There's a decent amount of filler, I would say, between Raw and SmackDown this week. Is there anything else from either of those shows that you want to run through before we kind of break down the Elimination Chamber card?
No, I'm starting to get to the point, though, where I don't need more. You know, like, I'm okay with there being a bunch of interviews and stuff that I can fast forward through. I'm okay with there being a match or two that I don't care about. Because they're doing the one thing I've asked for them, which is to deliver memorable moments that you leave that particular episode talking about. And that's what they did this week.
And sometimes those are it matches, and sometimes there's a storyline. Like, it's okay. It could be one or the other. It could be a little bit of both.
Correct. And that's why Raw was so good to me this week. I've desired this so much from Raw. I've desired that thing where you come out in the last 5 minutes and flip the fucking world on its ear with a simple statement or a challenge. I mean, Raw used to be so good about at the very least coming out and being like, well, guess what? You're defending that belt next week on Raw in the main event. You know, like, at least that kind of announcement that you would come with that would make me go, oh, shit, okay. Well, I can't miss next week's Raw now. That's what this week's Raw felt like.
Yeah, it really did. It's you know, planting the seed that stays with you the entire week. When you think about WWE, you're thinking about, honestly, you're either thinking about, at this point, Kofi from the SmackDown thing, or you're thinking about the tag team situation, or you're thinking about, most likely, honestly, the Becky, Charlotte, Vince, Ronda, all that stuff. They're telling stories that stick. And it's something that honestly, it felt like it had been missing for quite a while. So I appreciate that too. Like I like that. I like coming out of each episode with like one or two things. A show like SmackDown, if it's just one thing, it's okay. Raw being 3 hours, they kind of need to have a little bit more than just one thing usually, which is why I thought this week was perfect. I'm even going back to like last week's NXT, and seeing Gulak and Riddle go at it. I don't know if you've caught that match, but shit, man, it's worth it.
Oh yeah.
Just like
catch point, baby, catch point.
Yeah, like seeing those two guys do their thing. Like I talked about Riddle. I think it was at the Ramble before the Rumble, saying, "God, I hope we get something out of Riddle, because so far, like, you know, he's done his thing with Cassius and it's fine, but like I haven't really been convinced as to like, you know, why he should be there in a WWE roster. Like, I've seen him do his thing in PWG and I've seen him before, but we hadn't seen that yet. But we finally did with him and Gulak last week.
You know, why I like that though, is because it's effective. The one thing about Matt Riddle as a character, you know, which is kind of also his personality, is that everything comes very easy to him. Yeah. He's a natural. He's just, and that makes him a goofball, because everything's so easy to him. He doesn't have to work hard for it. He's just naturally gifted. He's naturally talented. So it makes it a big deal when he has to step up and try hard, or when he's pushed to his limits or whatever. And I think that's the thing about his character that's going to be cool going forward. Like, he's the Spicoli, he's the stoner, whatever. But it's more than that. I think more of Val Kilmer's character in Real Genius, where he's walking around wearing fucking silly shirts to like serious meetings at MIT and shit, because whatever, I don't give a fuck about what any of you think, because I'm smarter than every person in this room. So why should I be worried about what any of you think of me? And that's totally Matt Riddle's gimmick and his attitude and his persona. Like, and that's the way he needs to be, so that when he does have those matches like that against Gulak, it shows a different level that he needs to like step his game up to. I wouldn't even mind some losses, you know, based on him going up against a more strategic opponent that was better prepared for the match than he was, and that kind of shit. Like, his general slackerness should always be his Achilles heel as a character.
Totally. Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
But that's the way they have to look at characters. That's the way they have to look at these people. Like, yeah, Matt Riddle's a perfect god. What would make him lose? Well, the fact that he fucking doesn't take life really seriously, and he doesn't take a lot of this shit seriously enough. You know, and that's how they need to approach more of their guys.
Yeah. And that really plays in. I wouldn't mind a little more like backstory on Matt Riddle developing at a certain point in his career. Like, for me personally, going back and listening, he did an interview or two on the SPLX podcast, which I don't know is still, if whether that's still a thing or not. But he did a couple of those before coming over to WWE, and like, you got a lot of that story. You got to learn about his time in UFC, if you're not familiar with it, and kind of how that went and kind of fell apart. And a lot that's of it plays story. Right in what you just said. Yeah. He definitely found a fair amount of success, but it kind of just hit a wall at a certain point. And then pro wrestling became his savior, and It's cool seeing what he's pulled off at this point.
You know what's funny is I've had a lot of people question me because I'm a serious sports journalist, Josh, and I actually have a job covering baseball and shit. And they question why, like, why would I waste my time with wrestling? I've had other journalists ask me that directly to my face. The thing about pro wrestling is it's always going to be more fun than all of that other stuff. It always is.
Yeah.
It depends on who you are as a person and what you want out of life and what you want out of, like, your sport. But if you want to be entertained, find me fucking something more entertaining than pro wrestling. I dare you. I double dog dare you. Because wrestling is crazy and it always can be in such different forms. It can always be entertaining in such different ways. You're never going to get that out of sports, in my opinion. Plus, I root for shitty teams, so I don't really know what it is to feel joy about your sports team, like winning championships and shit. So that kind of goes along with it, too. But really, when it comes down to it, I love baseball. I really do. I love it. But baseball is baseball. It's always the same. It feels like I'm just talking about some other guy doing the exact same thing that some other guy was doing or whatever, you know, batting averages, slugging percentages. When it comes to pitchers, they're, you know, K to nine inning ratio and all that. It's all the same shit, though. It's all the same shit. And it's never going to be as entertaining as pro wrestling is. I can only imagine being somebody like Matt Riddle or some other UFC fighters or MMA fighters where you get to go be a character and be theatrical, but still use all of the training that you've had in your past while not getting hit in the face as often anymore. It seems like a fucking win-win-win to me. Why you would go into, you know, into pro wrestling versus being in MMA. Sure, the paydays aren't as huge, but the risk isn't as big either, you know? And
it depends. I mean, I don't know, man.
The paydays can be as huge.
Right? Yeah, like, honestly, and honestly, a lot of times they're even bigger because, I don't know, man. You talk to the UFC guys, the people who are on those undercards, they're not making a shit ton of money. They really aren't. It's the stars, those who are top billing, those who are getting those match of the night bonuses, things along those lines. Yeah, you're making nice money if you do that. But if you're most of the people in UFC, you're not making much. You're definitely not making as much as the lower tier guys in WWE. I'll say that much. I was listening to a Freakonomics podcast earlier today, actually, and they were talking to some UFC fighters and going through that exact thing. You know, they get paid like $12,000 to weigh in for a bout that they're scheduled for. Well, this is one fighter in particular got paid $12,000 for weighing in and showing up, you know, and then got another $12,000 for the win. Like, that's it. And if there was a loss, like, they would have just spent $12,000 for a single fight of months and months leading up to that. That's not great money. So when it comes down to it, going to something like WWE, if you're able, you have the personality to pull it off and everything, it's a great position to be in.
I agree. And, I mean, Matt Riddle's a little bit more than an undercard guy, but at the same time,
for sure,
there's no guarantees in that sport. There's no guarantees in any of this stuff. And WWE, I feel like you actually do have a little bit more control. You know what I mean? Like WWE, you can try harder. You can put forth a better effort and there's a chance you might get noticed more. And it's going to really be more personality based, getting over with the fans and such. But yeah. I mean, damn, I don't know. I feel like UFC, you could be like a badass and still kind of forgotten about. So I don't know. It's interesting, though, and I do love Matt Riddle, and I wish him the best. And
totally.
I go back to what you were saying in general, just the NXT card, the NXT shows recently have been crazy. You know, we've had the title changes. We've had everything going on, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, all of it overall has been a lot of fun to watch. I just want to go back to what I was saying, which is I think that's what makes me okay with the filler. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, the filler was what it is. There was matches that were uninteresting and whatever. I kind of checked out on some of that. But it doesn't mean I didn't come back around. You know, I feel like kind of like the crowd there in person. You know, I was brought back around by that tag match, and the ending finished it off just hot enough to leave me walking away happy with the show. So it's an exciting time, man. Wrestling's fun. Wrestling is more fun than it has been in the past, you know, 5 years of us doing this podcast. I feel like we've had our ups and downs, but it definitely feels like right now is quite possibly the most interesting time in wrestling that we've ever had. I mean, the prospect of AEW coming through and changing things like they possibly could, you know.
Yeah.
Josh and I have names that we've been given that we can't even float out there because we don't want to start any crazy rumors. But if some of the stuff we've been told and some of the stuff that has actually come out of people's mouths come to fruition, people are going to be blown away by the change of talent that we see leave WWE and go to AEW.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to be those guys that you hear about having problems with WWE, because I feel like those are all at work, you know, like kind of like what we saw with the Revival. It's going to be big names that people weren't really expecting to see step out the door. So I don't know. I think the next year in pro wrestling is going to just get more and more interesting, both on the show side of stuff and behind the scenes as well.
Yep. I agree entirely. It's all good right. For the business, man. Well, did we talk? Okay. Well, I want to kind of run through the Elimination Chamber card real quick, and we can give some quick predictions and all that jazz. No DQ match. This is like the most garbage match on the card. Braun Strowman, Baron Corbin. There's no chance Baron Corbin wins.
Braun
this,
is
right?
going to murder yeah. Baron Corbin.
But how is he going to murder him? How?
So, I don't know, because I could see Baron Corbin hitting Braun Strowman with like a truck or something and winning this match.
Recruiting Drew.
Or I could see Baron Corbin, recruiting somebody, right?
Yeah. All right. I would still like to see Braun Strowman bury Baron Corbin in, I don't know, something. Where is this? This is in Houston, I think. I don't know what's local to Houston. Burying him in something Houston related. Rocket ships.
Barbecue.
Yep. Oh.
Barbecue.
Sure. All right.
Yeah. Right.
Cruiserweight Championship. We saw the number one contender match take place at 205 Live here in Phoenix. Akira Tozawa getting his shot at Buddy Murphy.
Oh, man. That's sad, because that was Hideo Itami's last match is what
that
means.
I know.
Yeah. I'm gonna say good old Buddy Murphy retains.
I think so, too. I think it would be cool if Tozawa would take it, but I don't see it. Not seeing it. Intercontinental Championship match. It's a handicap match. This is one of those other things that I learned from looking at Wikipedia, because apparently I fast-forwarded through that part of the announcement on Raw. But Bobby Lashley and Lio Rush are facing Finn Balor simultaneously, defending Bobby Lashley's Intercontinental Championship.
What? I watched the whole show and I missed that too.
Unless Wikipedia is lying to me, which is possible. No, but yeah, I don't see
it. Don't. Yeah, I don't see him winning that one.
Yeah, me neither. Okay. Next up, yeah, we talked about a little bit Ronda Rousey defending against Ruby Riott. Charlotte and Becky probably causing a distraction in the crowd. I don't think that's going to be enough to distract Ronda from winning this match. In fact, it might be enough to distract Ruby from posing a real threat. I gotta say, man, side note, Ruby and Nikki this week, that was pretty cool. It's cool seeing those
Ruby's
women.
Way dope.
Honestly, the Ruby, Nikki, like, that's they're a big part of the future of the women's division. Whether it's Raw, SmackDown, or otherwise, I'm very curious to see how the next year or two for both of them goes. But now is not the time.
Ruby is so damn smooth. She's so damn smooth. Yeah, I know. It's kind of like the Bianca Belair match at NXT TakeOver. You knew there wasn't a fucking chance in hell she's going to win it, and you kind of feel like it's a placeholder match. But at the same time, it also feels like we could see Ruby get something different out of Ronda. Potentially, and that's really what I'm here for. I would like to see Ronda evolve a little bit in the ring with somebody as good as Ruby.
Yeah. The SmackDown Tag Team Championship, The Miz and Shane are defending against the Usos. I've grown to like The Miz and Shane. The build leading back to last October, November or so was kind of awkward, but it's come together nicely, I think. The Usos are the Usos, and they're always fun, but I feel like the Miz and Shane thing hasn't run out of gas. I feel like they're going to retain.
I liked what the Usos said, though. I like the position they took. I like the fact
Remind
that
me.
They... It's basically the position that like Shane and Miz are a joke as a tag team, and that they don't deserve to be a tag team, and they don't deserve to be calling themselves best in the world. And I like that chip on their shoulder about that. It's the exact direction to take with those two guys, because it is kind of a joke. It goes back to what you're saying. It feels very meta, because it feels like the Usos are once again saying out loud something very exact and precise about the situation that's more than just an opinion. It's Vince's fucking son on a team running around with the belts calling themselves the best tag team in the world right now during this time in professional wrestling. It's a fucking spit in the face to so many tag teams. That makes it hilarious, but it also makes it great for the Usos to kind of, you know, bounce off of that. It's fantastic, especially considering that the Usos are considered widely to be the best tag team in the world. So, yeah, it'd be very insulting to see the boss's son running around with a goofball from Miz and Mrs. claiming to be the best tag team in the world. I would be upset with them, too.
Yeah. Alrighty. That's pretty much it. And that brings us to the Elimination Chamber matches. I think we're on the same page about the Boss and Hug connection being the most likely. Any of those other teams could, you know, be a fun swerve. And
they could. None of them are out of the realm of possibility, with the exception of Naomi and Carmella, if they can all throw stuff at my screen.
100%. As far as the WWE Championship match goes, though, Daniel Bryan defending against the slew of AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, and Samoa Joe. Any chance Daniel Bryan drops the belt?
Zero chance of that. As a matter of fact, I'd like to predict that Rowan somehow gets his way locked into the cage, and that's how Daniel Bryan retains.
I like that.
Rowan either takes someone's spot and gets in one of the cells, or just breaks his way in somehow when someone's leaving. But he's going to be the reason why Daniel Bryan retains. Even if he has to punch someone through the like chains of the Elimination Chamber, he'll be involved.
I feel like Daniel Bryan's just been too good as a heel champion to drop that already. And, you know, they just debuted that belt. Like, they got to get some mileage out of all that.
Oh, he's not losing it until after WrestleMania, that's for sure. I don't see him even dropping it at WrestleMania. You're right. I mean, you don't do that. You don't give someone a hemp belt made out of laser cut wood and take it away from them a month later. That's not happening.
And turquoise, likely sourced right here in Sedona.
Oh, it's beautiful. I love it and I hate it at the same time.
The very place he got married.
We were present. We were present to see him throw away the WWE Championship belt in a trash can, Josh. I still can't get over that.
Yeah. That was a hell of a thing.
See, man. That's a moment. That's a moment. I can't tell you about half of the goddamn card that was that night in SmackDown when Kurt Angle shot Big Show with a fucking tranquilizer dart and shaved his head. But I won't stop talking about that moment. That's the same thing with this particular night. Daniel Bryan throwing the trash is like a life altering. I'll tell my grandkids I was there when Daniel Bryan did that.
It's those moments. It's the Big Show thing for you. It's when I was at Raw in China, low blow Triple H on top of the announce table. Like there's things like that happen, and enough of those have been happening on a week to week basis with WWE lately. Like they don't have to like blow things up and get crazy like they did back in the Monday Night Wars. They just have to give us a little bit of something each and every week. And they've been pretty successful in the last few weeks, I think. But yeah, that's pretty much it. So now I'm ready for winners of the week.
Now winners of the week. Yeah. What do you got?
The most obvious choice is Kofi Kingston this week. The man is fantastic. He deserves every bit of a push that he can possibly get. And by God, he just put on a hell of a performance. Even when there were like a few like rest holds of sorts, I was like, you know what? He earned this. And oh shit, shit's going down. Like, they didn't waste too much time on even that. He was just nonstop for almost an hour.
It's just crazy to give someone an opportunity like that and then not think that this is going to lead to a future, at least world championship feud. Yeah. You know, if not a run for him, at the very least a feud for the title.
2019 should be interesting for the New Day as a whole. I don't see them they might have another tag team championship run in them this year, but they could honestly go the whole year without that and start to focus a little bit more on the singles and just kind of rotate them based on opportunity.
Never forget that Xavier Woods has made that company millions and millions of dollars. Never forget that.
Via YouTube.
Whenever you worry about the New Day going anywhere, never forget that Xavier Woods alone, based through video gaming alone, has made that company millions of dollars. My winner of the week is Becky Lynch once again, because she is the man, because she has the wrestling world talking. Charlotte, I want to give her an honorable mention because she has played this so well. And I, once again, it just kind of makes you angry when someone fits back into the exact role that you knew they would be good in. And when they're there, they excel at it. You know, it'd be like trying to make Kevin Owens a face and then realizing he's the best heel that there could possibly be. You know, there's just some people that fit so well into a particular role, and Charlotte has done that because she's just the perfect antagonist to Becky Lynch, who we just can't get enough of. And even in suspension, even in simply making a decision about apologizing, she was the most compelling thing on pro wrestling television this week.
Yep.
You know, I go back to what I said. And I mean it when I say this is the real women's revolution. When you have men and women and children alike all clamoring to see one person, and that person in pro wrestling is no longer a man, it's no longer the biggest male star in the company, but it's now the biggest female star in the company. That's where we've finally evolved past women wrestling being a sideshow to the actual product. That's where we've gotten to the point where women's wrestling is equal. And I feel it's there, you know. And in some cases, women's wrestling has proven to even been superior. So, you know, hats off to Becky Lynch and everything she's doing. WWE is supporting her in this whole thing, and they're doing the right thing, I think, by pulling back on it and making us, the audience, want to see her more. You know, that's what this whole thing is going to result in. And It's going to be the perfect, if they're patient with it, it's going to be the perfect combination to have everybody, you know, behind this being the main event at WrestleMania, and everybody behind Becky Lynch whooping fucking Ronda's ass. And then Ronda can go away and deal with personal stuff and come back as a heel with the Four Horsewomen, and the universe will be right. Perfect.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 370 of The Steel Cage. You can get us on Twitter at Cap under Caveman with a K. He is at Schlizag, but of course, all roads lead to at The Steel Cage. Send us an email, anything you guys want us to discuss, any ideas, any comments about the show. Please feel free to send us an email to podcast@thesteelcage.com. Go to iTunes, drop us a 5-star review. Say nice things about people on the show. You don't have to say nice things. I know all the things that people have said on the iTunes reviews. I've seen them all. I've cried in the dark in the corner. I'm past that. Nothing you can say to me is meaner than what my wife says to me on a daily basis anyway. So go on there, leave us a 5-star review.
Write about your love for pineapple on pizza.
No, god damn it, Josh. God damn it. Get your girl a heart-shaped pizza, because girls love heart-shaped pizzas, by the way. Happy Valentine's Day to all of our loves out there. Me and Tim, we're still eating cereals on the Cereal Podcast. You can check that out. It's an all-cereal podcast all the time now. And also, what do we got over on Funny Nerd Tangent? Anything, Josh?
The latest was podcast number 69, which I don't know if we could say nice anymore because Donald Trump used the nice meme in a tweet.
That shit.
Yeah.
He ruined it.
Yeah. But 40 for 40 comes to a conclusion with Greg's 40th birthday this weekend. At number one, I'm like, do I give it away at this point?
Nope. No, but, I don't think you do. I think you make viewers listen to it. Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, not listen to it, but go to unfunnynerdtangent.com. The viewers could become readers and check out his take on his number one.
Oh no. Wait till I tell Tim you introduced the third category. He's gonna be so upset.
Readers. I think that if you know Greg, you won't be super surprised. And if you look at the top 40, you'll be like, there's one glaring omission. It's not too hard to figure out, but I'm looking forward to reading his take on it and wishing him a 40th birthday. Happy 40th birthday as well.
Yes, yes. Most importantly, happy birthday, Greg. We love you. We're glad that you were born upside down. And I'm glad that the drop bears didn't kill you. God bless you. That's all we got, guys. Thank you again so much for listening to this episode of the Steel Cage Podcast. And remember, kids, you're not the man. Vince McMahon is the man.